I'm Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporina of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special episode of the On Air podcast. Today is the 1 year anniversary of the birth of the On Air podcast, and we are actually recording it on the 1 year anniversary of us recording the very first episode. When I think back to a very long time ago, Grace and I discussing various things, and then the idea of a podcast came up, and it was just an idea. And it took us quite a long time to get it off the ground for various reasons. We had no idea how it would go once we did get it off the ground. But I have just been kind of blown away by the number of people who have listened, who have sent us topics to discuss, who have commented on our Instagram or followed us on Tumblr. It's just, I think, more than I had ever expected it would be. And it's just been really, really lovely. You never know when you start these things how people are going to respond, but we're still here a year later, which is really amazing. And I'm not very good at sincerity or emotion because I'm very British and very repressed. But I would say it has been tough doing the podcast sometimes because it takes a lot of time to do the notes and the research and to edit it and everything. But it's always worth it because it means that I get to talk with my friend every week about this silly little thing that we're both interested in and can't talk to a lot of other people in real life about. Grace and I were friends before the podcast, but I think we've become even closer because we've got to speak to each other every single week. And that's me done with the sincerity.
I think, you know, I do have to echo all of that. I distinctly remember when we did the first episode and I was like, okay, we're going to get about 5 listeners. And I was like, that's fine. I don't mind having 5 listeners because it's just a bit of fun. And then when we released the first episode and we were watching just the views go up and it hit like 50. And I was like, 50 people. And it was insane. And I still don't fully believe that other people are actually listening to it, particularly from like all around the world.
Yeah.
it's wild and it's insane and it's wonderful. And I think, you know, there was a fair few times I didn't think we'd ever get started. But I am very glad I did it. And I think if you ever go on my Tumblr and you search my tag for Jess Duchess of Ulster Gutlands, the first few posts are just me being incredibly stalkery. I'm just like, wow, I'm such a fan. So yeah, I was very excited, and I still get very excited whenever I see you comment on my posts. I'm like, ah, it's Jess. But also, like you say, like, I do not regularly bring up royals in my everyday life, but I often have a lot of thoughts about them, and it's a really good that I can just sort of vent them all at random people. And then also things that aren't royal related, like just occasionally random things about my life. I could be like, I've got this issue, I need to vent for 10 minutes. 1 second.
That's our sincerity over. British people are legally allotted 3 minutes a day where they're allowed to be genuine and sincere and emotional. And then all of the rest of the time, we just have to be sarcastic and bitter. So we've done our allotted time. I'm sorry to everyone else that I talk to. But so for our kind of 1 year anniversary, we wanted to do something a bit different, and like obviously there have been things going on that we could have talked about, but nobody's gotten engaged or cut off half their family or had a baby or anything dramatic like that we'd really have to talk about. So we're going to do a kind of special episode format as well. And this idea is sort of an amalgamation of a couple of ideas of some friends gave me. I'm not going to name them because I don't know if they want to be dragged into the world of the podcast, but they know who they are. So one of them said, why don't you do kind of like a review of the year? And the other one said, well, why don't you do like a kind of yearbook or like awards presentation kind of thing? And so we thought, let's do both. So we have picked out some fairly random categories. They're kind of like yearbook categories or awards categories. And we are going to give out these awards, metaphorically, obviously, to the royals who we think over the last year have most earned this award. Is that a fair description of what we're doing?
Yeah, I think definitely. Yeah, I think I spent a while going through yearbook websites trying to find yearbook titles, and it was really hard because I didn't think we could put something like most likely to go to prison or most likely to be marry a prince, because I was like, well, these are really inconveniently unhelpful. But we did manage to find some.
They're not really, yearbooks are not really that big a thing here in the same way they are in America.
No, I didn't have a yearbook. We did have a prom, and we did like votes for like superlatives at prom, and I did get most likely to win the Pulitzer Prize, which I'm still very proud of. I haven't won a Pulitzer Prize in the time since, but I'm like, yeah, I could. I was voted for it by my peers. I'm sticking with that one.
I remember when we were doing our yearbook thing, and we were doing like yearbook categories, and we were going to give one to everybody. I remember, because this is just the way my brain works. No wonder nobody liked me. But I got really agitated about it because some people were choosing serious categories. Like there was a girl in our year who was really good at science, and I think she won like most likely to find a cure for cancer or something like that. And so that was realistic. And there were other people where they were going for like ironic ones or like funny ones because it was the least likely that they would, you know, it was sort of like a knowing nod that they wouldn't actually be likely to do this thing. And so that really bothered me. I was like, it has to be consistent. Either everybody is getting one that is they're most likely to do this thing, or we're all doing funny ones. Like we can't do both. But nobody else found that annoying or distracting. So I got most likely to be on Jersey Shore. Which was an ironic one because and mostly based on the fact that I'm extremely pale and everyone on Jersey Shore was like orange. And that was the big reality show at the time. And we thought that was vaguely funny, but really still to this day, I'm bitter about it. And it happened like 12 years ago. So what category do you want to go first?
The first one I have on my list is Class Clown. So you might as well start with that one.
Go for it. Yes. So our first category is Class Clown. I think that's a pretty classic yearbook one. So I had an honourable mention of the pen that Charles wrestled with.
That was a great pen. Really iconic.
My ultimate winner. And oh my God, you'll realise that in every single one of these, I overthought them or I did like multiple answers, or I was like, I thought about this one, but then I also thought about this one. And so I'm so bad at picking things. I ended up going with Prince Louis.
So did I.
Oh, sorry. So, I mean, it was predominantly for me because of his antics at the Jubilee, which is episode 25, Platy Jube. I think, to be honest, without him, the Jubilee would have been incredibly boring to me.
And when you think about the Jubilee, I think about Louis. Mm-hmm. And when I was making these notes, I realised how few events he was actually at. Because in my head, he was like there all the time, being iconic. He was like at two things. Yeah. But he did them really well.
Yeah, imagine only going to two things and like not even saying anything and you're still stealing the show. Like,
you know, I like it when we see the kid. But I'm going to say it sounds weird, but I don't necessarily always enjoy watching them on engagements because they're like on their best behaviour. They're on duty. But I love seeing kids being kids. So I love, you know, like when they used to go to polo or you'd see them out and about. And this was an official thing. So there were cameras and it felt like you were fine to watch them, but they were also just hanging out as a family. So they were just being themselves. And Louis was just iconic and everyone in the world fell in love with him, which was brilliant.
I have no doubt that at home, Charlotte and George can be just as silly as Louis is because they're still little kids. But they kind of now seem to understand when we're in public, this is, you know, we behave in a slightly different way. Whereas I don't think that Louis is at that stage of development yet. So he was just like doing whatever he wanted. And I think particularly the concert was notable because like he had other kids around him. So like at the concert, it was all of Zara and Mike and Peter Phillips' children. And he was like stealing sweets He was sticking his tongue out. He was pulling faces. He was being very naughty, putting his hand over his mum's mouth when she told him to be quiet. So I'm sure it was an absolute nightmare for everybody around to be there. But as an observer, it was very funny.
Yeah, and I loved, he was, you know, he was interacting with them. You saw, my runner-up in this category was Mike. And part of that reason was because of the pageant, he was just looking at Louie, and every now and then he'd do that thing where you, like, put your fingers at your eyes and then point them at him.
Yeah.
I just imagine him doing that all the time, like, watching you, Louie, behave. And Louis paying no attention, and Charlotte and George were getting so fed up with him. And then he would just, like, run along and be like, "Hi, Grandpa Charles, I'm here." And Charles and Anne were just completely oblivious to what was going on. They were like, "Oh, look, a float over there." And their grandkids were being chaotic, like, three seats away. And I just loved it.
Yeah, and I think my favourite interaction was definitely at one point, I think it was Lena Tyndall had some sweets. And there was some sort of kerfuffle. I think Louis tried to steal some sweets. And then so, I mean, Lena could have got an award for this as well. She then went around handing out sweets to every single person except Louis. And she kept glaring at him because he tried to steal the sweets from her. So that was another very funny moment. I actually forgotten she could get an honorary mention too. It was just so funny to see their little interactions, because the camera wasn't right in front of them. They didn't know what was going on, and you got to see, like, an insight into what it must be like at home.
And I think, you know, even when they went up on the balcony afterwards and he was just kind of like trying to climb over the edge of the balcony to see what was going on, and you could see, like, Kate and William were like, "We can't be like, get down," but at the same time they were like, "Please don't fall off a balcony."
Yeah, that would be a disastrous way to end the Jubilee.
It was like, oh no. But then even kind of afterwards, when the Kensington Palace Twitter account did their, like, roundup, and they were like, "We all had such a wonderful time, especially Louis."
Yeah.
And I was like, that's so sweet, because I always think, you know, everyone in the country was like, "Oh, look at little Louis." And even now, if there's something wrong, like, "Where's little Louis?" No one knows who he is, really. But where's little Louis? He's everyone's favourite. But it just felt nice that, like, they or the social media person was like, "Oh, I'll make a little nod to Louis being so chaotic, we've noticed."
Yeah. Yeah. So he brought us a lot of joy this year, and made the Jubilee celebrations bearable, which I think, to be honest, I would not have really been interested in them at all if it hadn't been for him.
Yeah. I found that really hard category, and I got it down. Well, actually, I got it down to, I only had Mike and Louis on my list. And I was like, okay, do I actually think Mike is a class clown, or is it just because I've watched him hanging out with Eileen from Corrie and I'm finding that really fun? I don't know. So Louis won by default, but he also was so funny. I think he would have won with competition.
Yeah, I mean, I did have a runner-up. I'm not going to say it, because I realized throughout going through these categories that I could have picked them for literally every single category, and I didn't realize that, and went until I was drafting it, and I was like, wow, I really like them a lot more than I realized.
So intrigued.
Yeah. What's your next category?
My next one was Best Dressed.
Best Dressed. Perfect. Okay. So I said Letizia.
So did I!
Yay! There is going to come a point where we disagree.
What on earth are you on?
So I don't always love what Letizia wears, but what I like about Letizia is that I think that she is very good at styling her wardrobe. A lot of royals wear nice clothes, whereas Letizia has style. And so it's how she puts an outfit together. I think she's adventurous, which means that I don't always like what she wears, but I appreciate her for giving it a shot. So episode 23, we talked about the dress that caused a huge amount of kerfuffle. And controversy, because she had cutouts on her side. Everyone was like, "Royal women shouldn't show their abdomens, la 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 la." And we had a whole conversation about it. And then recently she wore, we didn't talk about this, but she wore a skirt with a hole in the knee for no reason.
I still don't understand that.
Still don't understand that skirt at all. But I would rather have somebody who's adventurous and tries things than somebody who just always wears the same kind of boring thing. So that's one of the reasons I really love her style. I also think that she is a low spender. Back in episode 6, we talked about the cost of royal wardrobes, and she spent on average, according to UFO No More, she spent on average $343 per new piece, which made her the most frugal of all the royals. And so I think she's just very good at knowing when to splash out and get something a bit more expensive, like a massive gown, and knowing when to kind of keep it to high street. And she'll buy separates and mix and match, and like sometimes have a more expensive thing with a more affordable thing. She's just very good at styling rather than just wearing clothes.
So, disclaimer, every other year I would have chosen Kate for this. And I know people always like Kate's outfits are really boring, but her style matches mine very similarly. When I was doing research for this, I was stalking back on my blog and I ended up on like page 700, and it was like my favorite outfits of Kate's from last year, and I was like, look how good this was. I'm not really vibing with her clothes so much this year, so I had to find someone else. I was like it's probably gonna be Letizia. I looked around a few and I settled on Letizia, and then I was like, well, I'll make a list of some of my favorites of her outfits. And I started going back, and every outfit I came to was like, well, I like that, so I'll write that one down. So, and I like that one, or I like that one. I like all of these. I was like, I can't just list every outfit she's worn this year.
Who says you can't? The next hour will be dedicated to a list of all of the clothes that Letizia has worn that Grace liked.
I like this one, and I like this one, and I like this one. Wasn't a fan of this one, but I really like this one. But I think that was the thing, was she wears a real range of clothes. Like, sometimes she wears, you know, leather trousers, or, you know, dresses with cutouts, and, you know, short like mini dresses. And then other times she wears like proper like princess gowns, and sometimes she's wearing jeans and a jumper, and they all work for her, and she makes them work for her. She doesn't ever look like she's like dressing up, mm-hmm. you know, to fit a role. And she doesn't look like she's, you know, just trying to be down with the kids and wearing really casual clothes. They all look like something she would wear anyway, but also really suited to the occasion. And then my favorite moment, I think, was when she wore the same dress as someone else she was at an engagement with. They were wearing these white and black dresses, and she was like, this is so funny, let's take a picture. You know, when that happens, it's going to be a headline stealer. But she was just like, great, I love it, we've worn matching outfits. And it's probably made that other woman's day. And I just thought, you know, I was trying to go through it, and there were a few things that really stood out. So the matching black and white dress, when she wore the shirt that was made by a Ukrainian sort of textile person.
Yeah.
Was incredible. But yeah, I just think that, and also she's very consistent. And like you said, I don't necessarily sit there and think every single outfit she's ever worn is brilliant. Like that one with the hole in the skirt was weird. She had one where she kind of like had sleeves that she'd sort of them cut out the side. That was a bit strange. But she doesn't ever go through a period where I'm like, okay, she's worn a bunch of really boring outfits, or she just won seven outfits that I hated in a row because they weren't even exciting. Even the ones I hate for like a dramatic reason, because there's a hole in a skirt. Like, I love that. It's bizarre. Great. More of that, please.
Yeah, like, give it a shot. Why not? It's more interesting than just seeing the same thing over and over and over again, or like the same outfit in seven different colors that you're like, why did you need to buy this? Or why did you need to buy yet another coat, or yet another striped top? Like, you've already got so many in your... This is a very pointed conversation.
Yeah, we're not targeting anyone.
No, no. And she wears a lot of things that, like, it's just a basic dress, but she somehow, the way she carries herself, she just looks incredible in it. Like, there's been times where she's literally just worn a black gown, and on anyone else, it'd be the most boring thing ever, but she just looks incredible in it. And yeah, I think you're right about the sort of, she's very good at that, and underrated at that kind of sartorial diplomacy thing. So like when she went to Sweden, she wore, for the state banquet, she wore a gown from H&M, who is obviously a Swedish designer. And it was also an adaptation of a gown that Victoria had worn for, the photographs to mark her 10th wedding anniversary. So it was like a nice little nod there. And then, yeah, the Ukrainian blouse, which we discussed in episode 13, I've got that written down. that was a really lovely moment as well, because at the time, royals were sort of coming out of the woodwork to talk about Ukraine, but not, you know, some countries were still sorting out where they stood and what was okay for a royal to talk about or not. And so it was kind of like a way to show support without being like, I'm going to wear a Ukrainian flag, or I'm going to, you know, it was in that early stage where you couldn't really say as much. She was still showing her support. So I think, yeah, she ticks all the boxes really, of like, she wears nice clothes, she tries to be adventurous, she doesn't spend that much money, and she you know, sees how her clothes can make a statement beyond just a pretty dress. So that's all I could ask for, really.
I mean, I will let everyone know on the 24th of November next year whether or not Kate has improved.
Yeah.
Gone back to my top spot, because I was very shocked she wasn't, but yeah.
The next category we've got is most improved, and I found this one really, really difficult, I'll be honest.
This was the only one I was completely confident on.
Okay.
Exactly who I was choosing.
Okay, well, who did you pick?
I chose King Charles.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. I chose Camilla, so...
Okay, we're very on sync today.
Yeah, we are. Well, I think the reason I found it difficult was because I was like, okay, who do I like more now than I liked this time last year? And I'll be honest with you, I like everyone about the same or less than I did last year. So I didn't think that I could pick anybody who I liked, you know. And then I was sort of like, well, most improved, if somebody had 10 controversies last year, but they only had 7 this year, that's quite an improvement, but they still had 7 controversies. So it's like, I don't know if I can really pick them. So I found it so hard to pick this one.
I knew it was Charles. That was my original thought when we were still kind of like, is it going to be most improved, biggest surprise? I was like, it's Charles. And then I was like, I'll think of some others. And I thought of people like Princess Elizabeth of Belgium. But I was like, she's not really improved. She's just like starting out. So I didn't feel like it was right to pick her because she wasn't bad before.
Yeah.
But she would be my honorary mention because I've absolutely loved watching her do things this year. But for me, Charles, the Prince of Wales, was, I mean, I always quite liked Charles, but he was just there being controversial occasionally.
Yeah.
And then he became king, and I kind of just expected him to be like Charles and carry on. But to be fair to Charles, I think he has completely exceeded my expectations in every single possible way. I didn't think he was going to be anywhere near as kind of decisive as he has been, or, you know, kind of straightforward with things. And he's still the same Charles, because, I mean, we all saw the pen thing. That was weird.
The class clown, like, runner-up.
Making William and Kate Prince Princess of Wales in his sort of opening speech as king, the amount of times he spent meeting the crowds. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head of something he's done since becoming king, apart from the pen issue, that was kind of has really put a foot wrong. And there aren't many royals who have gone for that period of time without causing some kind of minor issue. So I was not expecting to be like a King Charles stan, but at the moment.
I think that's a perfectly fair choice, to be honest. And I could definitely have picked that for this category, because I think anytime the a royal dies or abdicates and a new king takes over, that kind of is the most sensitive and vulnerable time, because it's change, especially. Well, I think in the British royal family, it's even more than any other monarchy, because we have had our queen longer than pretty much any other monarchy has had their monarch. So it kind of, you know, most people who live in the world have not lived in a world without Queen Elizabeth II on the throne of Britain. And so Charles did have to face this huge change, and to kind of try and keep things stable and restore confidence very quickly, but also seem to be mourning his mother. Like, he couldn't just be like, oh, well, it's business now, even though my mom died 6 minutes ago. You know, he had to be emotional, but not too emotional. You know, we talked about that in our episode, and it's just a lot of pressure that he had on him. And he has done very, very well. You know, I think a lot of the decisions he's made, and like the fact that he's addressing the Council of State thing now as well, which we've talked about quite a lot, of like, why didn't the Queen address this? Why was this just kind of being, you know, muddling along? And he's, you know, really, it's not been that long since he became king, but he's kind of, it does seem like he's addressing all of the important things pretty early on. I think that's a good choice.
I also think, you know, every day when I see like the court circular things come through, I'm always like, God, he's going to have such a big engagement count at the end of this year.
Yeah.
It's like 8 engagements a day, which is completely irrelevant to why I think he's most improved. But I just think it's quite, you know, funny to look at when I think about the fact he's in his 70s and I don't do that much work in a day. I'm just like, yeah, write some stories. And he's like, I've met 14 heads of state.
I did see a lot of things about how this is his first job in his 70s, you know, which is not entirely accurate. He had a job before, but the jokes, I understand the jokes and they do make me laugh, because he's been waiting for this for a very long time. And I suppose he's had a lot of time to plan out what he would do. Why I chose Camilla is probably less about stuff that she has done. Like, I think Charles, he's done more that shows he's most improved. Since we started this podcast, we've talked about the fact that there was a criminal investigation into Charles's charities. Like, he hasn't had the best year, but he has done a lot well over the last few months in particular. Camilla, I don't think has changed her approach to things really in any way. So it's less, I picked her less because she's improved and more because, like, the circumstances around her have improved, which is maybe a cheaty way of doing it. But that's so basically, if you told me when we were talking about the podcast last year and starting it off and planning what we were going to do, if you told me that not only in a year's time would Camilla be queen consort, but also that everyone would just kind of be fine with that and nobody would really be causing that much of a fuss, I would never have believed you. I think the last year has been really the culmination of like 20 odd years of PR and work from Camilla to kind of restore public confidence and to win people around to her being Charles's wife and eventually the queen. And they've been working on this for 20 years almost. And this last year, or just these last few months really, that's the culmination, like that's the final test, the exam at the end of the course. And I think she has also done her job incredibly well. She hasn't really put a foot wrong. I really like that she has been included in a lot of things around sort of the mourning of the Queen as Charles's wife. But she's never kind of, it's always felt like she was just there as a support for Charles. She was never trying to center herself or anything. And yeah, I mean, really, if you think about it, she hasn't caused any major controversies over the last year, which for a royal is quite an achievement.
I've always liked Camilla. Like, she's always been like my second favourite British royal. And I feel like some of that is because I missed the Diana thing and everyone liked her so much. I was just like, well, I'll like Camilla to be contrary. But I think, you know, as I actually learned about her, I really do like something she stands for. And the thing that always gets me is when I talked, but when people talk to me about royals and they don't realize that, like, I know about royals, they just kind of, because it'll be the rare occasion it comes up and they'll talk about Camilla, and it can be people like, you know, in their 60s, 70s, or people in their like 30s, and they talk about her with such like vitriol and anger and hatred. And I'm like, I don't think I hate anyone that much. And Camilla's done nothing to any of these people. So I have such a soft spot for her. And like you said, I did not expect her sort of becoming queen to be a nice, peaceful. I expected her to be like, people being like, she'll never be, and there are people who go, she'll never be my queen. But I expected them to be doing it on the streets, or, you know, going to marches and going like, love you, Charles, hate you, Camilla, you know. And that hasn't happened.
There were moments where they were sort of cheering, but specifically for Charles and Camilla. It wasn't just like, oh, we'll cheers for Charles and Camilla's also there, I guess. It was like, we'll cheer for both of them. And I mean, that's probably quite a low bar, that like, after you've lost your mother-in-law, somebody didn't scream in your face that they hate you, so that means that you're doing a good job. But, you know, a few years ago, I wouldn't have been so sure. Like, I think even when we talked, you know, literally a few weeks before, or the week before the Queen died, when we were talking about like, will Camilla be involved in things, there was a question mark for us about like how much she was going to be included in some of these things to mark the Queen's death, because we did still think, well, we don't know how people are going to respond. But it seems like people have realized, even if they don't necessarily love her, people have realized that after like 20 years of not really doing anything controversial and just quietly getting on with the job, she's actually all right.
Yeah, she's a good egg, just good work.
Yeah, she's just a woman. So, next category, most athletic. That feels like a very yearbook one.
Yeah, this is where you put your jock.
Do they still say that in America, jocks?
I mean, they do in High School Musical. That's where I get my knowledge of America from.
Yeah, all of our knowledge of American culture is based on High School Musical. So I put Crown Prince Frederick.
Okay, I put in brackets Frederick, but not him because I don't watch him. And then my real choice was Kate. It's like, oh, nice, yeah. I know it was Fred. I know it's Crown Prince Frederick of Denmark. I know he's the athletic one, but I didn't really know anything he does. And I wanted to put Kate for something. So she got this one.
No, I think that's totally fair enough. Episode 32, which is Very Good Amateurs. That was our sports episode. And I know that when we say we did an episode all about sports, people are going to be like, well, okay, missing out that one. But it actually is a really good episode. And we talk about like why royals are so overly represented in elite sports and things like that. It's a really good episode. And I think in that episode, we talked about how kind of this has been a year of general disappointment from royals when it comes to sporting events, like the handling of the World Cup and things like that. But I think Frederick has shown kind of his continued commitment to sporting things, particularly with the Tour de France, which he was really heavily involved in, and like he went to France and like he took part in it as well. He did his cycling, and then like every year he has his big royal run where thousands of people go to the streets and run, and he joins them, and you know, it's a big deal. So much of his work, I think, is based around sports. I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean he's athletic, but he is.
Yeah, I think, you know, I am not always 100% pleased with the way she handles sporting things. And I will rant in a minute about some of her rugby stuff. But this year, she did become the patron of the Rugby Football League and the Rugby Football Union, which I actually wasn't expecting. And I know a lot of people were saying it, but I wasn't sure. I thought they might just add it on to William. So I was really glad she got that. I'm really glad she did that kind of rugby training day. She did, obviously, Wimbledon, the Commonwealth Games. They did sailing in sailing in the Bahamas. They did diving in Belize. They did a sports and cultural event in Jamaica. She did the sailing Grand Prix in the summer. And even things like, you know, like when they went to Cambridge, they did a little county show and, you know, she found a football and started kicking it. Like, she's always kind of around sports. And I always say the things when I think of Kate, it's early years, art and sport. They're like her things. Even though, you know, I always thought it was weird we did that kind of sportsman episode and we looked at, you know, these royals who are also professional sports people. And Kate isn't a professional sports person, but she kind of has that sports person approach to things. I've always thought in that kind of like a really determined sort of single-mindedness.
There's that phrase, sorry to interrupt, there's that phrase, which I think is quite an out-of-date phrase now, but it's jolly hockey sticks. Where you're, it's like, it's yeah. A British phrase where you're like very enthusiastic about something. Particularly women, like upper class women.
Like she's most herself when she's in like trainers surrounded by a bunch of 7-year-olds playing a game of tennis. And I am going to complain a bit about her patronage of rugby because she became patron of men's, women's and wheelchair rugby. And not only did the women's rugby team win the one of them, I don't know if it was legal union, in New Zealand. I shouldn't even tweet them. But the men's wheelchair from one of them, won it in the UK, in England.
Oh, dear.
On Friday. She wasn't even there. Do you tweet them? Tweet them, Kate. It's not hard. Hire someone to do it.
But, see, no. Yeah. See, as somebody who knows absolutely nothing about rugby, I was like, oh, she's done really well with the rugby. she posted like one statement or something that was inclusive of people, of women and people in the wheelchair rugby as well. And so I was like, oh, that's great. She's paying tribute to it. But I forgot that they actually do play.
I mean, I'll give her credit for like when she went to the men's rugby match, she went and met with the women's team who'd played earlier that day. Like that was fine. You can, you know, but I think next year I'd like to see her actually go and visit everyone and not just do what I'm going to describe as the William approach and just seeing the men.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what we talked about in that episode. It's Very Good Amateurs, about sort of like how there's very few, everybody pays loads of attention to the men when they play any sport, but when the women play it, it's like no, you know, she's got a lot of power as a woman who is very sporty and now has this position to kind of promote the game, and I think she's done better than William, but there's definitely still some room for growth. But I think that's a good choice, because you're right that Kate is very, she's very athletic in like she might not be able to outrun Frederick, which is something I would pay to see, a race between them, but she's got a very sporty mindset. It kind of like, it feels like it runs through everything she does,
and a very sort of diverse interest in sports as well, yeah, rather than, you know, just being like football.
Yeah. Cutest couple, again, very classic yearbook, although not for me because I did go to an all-girls school and there were no couples at my school, so we couldn't really have had that, but you know, I believe it's a very classic thing. So I thought initially I was going to be like, okay, well, who's got like the most PDA and has been sort of like super cute with each other, but then I thought, well, none of them really. Sorry, I have to explain all of my choices because I'm like, when I was writing them, I was like, well, this is my reasoning for it. I went with Gustav and Karina.
Oh, what a cute choice.
Yeah.
Love that.
What did you go with?
Well, I didn't really know. And I kind of hovered around a few people for ages. And I thought about Charles and Camilla. And I thought about William and Kate because they did their first public kiss in about a million years. And in the end, I actually kind of settled on Anne and Tim.
Oh, nice!
I've never actually paid that much attention to them before, but this year I have. And also I had a dream the other day that Tim proposed to Anne on live TV, even though they're already married. So I'm just feeling in a very Anne and Tim mood at the moment.
Oh, well, see, that's going to bring all of the Anne fans, or the fans, which with a little F and a, you know, they're very good at puns. That's going to bring all them to our yard. So they'll love that. Yeah, I don't pay much attention to them as a couple, really, but they're very solid with each other. I think they're kind of like how I would be as a couple with somebody, because like I'm not interested in holding your hand or kissing you in public, or like when I see all these royals with all their PDA, like I'm not judging them, like do what you want to do, but it's just very not me. And I think I'd be much more like Anne, of like, why are you touching me? I've got something to do.
Yeah, I think there was a bit of the Festival of Remembrance the other week, and they were, you know, getting up to leave, and they just kind of made each other laugh in the background. And I was like, it's the Festival of Remembrance, guys, not the time. But I just kind of, they just always seem to be, you know, having a lot of fun with each other, and there's no kind of drama or disaster going on. And, you know, they're just hanging out, and occasionally they go to like Anne's ex-husband's kids' weddings together, and I just like that their relationship is strong enough that they can just casually do that.
Yeah, it's kind of I always forget that the beginning of their relationship was so controversial, you know. I always forget that it was such a controversial thing, because now they just seem like such a normal couple that, like, obviously they've been together forever. And I loved him as well, particularly for his relationship with Anne's grandchildren. I think as kind of a step father and a step grandfather, Tim is just lovely with the kids, and I love that there's this tradition of him like holding all of the children upside down by their feet, which sounds terrifying, but they love it. And I, you know, I think he definitely seems to be somebody who, like, I mean, he must be, he's always seems very like soft to me as well, like as just sort of like soft guy. But he was very highly accomplished in the military, and he's married to Princess Anne. So he's got to have some backbone.
Yeah, it's like, if you manage to woo Princess Anne, you've got to have something about you. But yeah, I know, I've noticed the fandom call him a teddy bear, and I can see that because he's just calm, serene.
I'm so fascinated by how that must have started out. She must have been the aggressor, because like, if it was Princess Beatrice or Princess Eugenie, I can understand how a member of staff would flirt with them. Or like if it was William or Harry before they got married, like I could understand how flirtation might develop because they're more human. Not that Anne isn't human, but she's really scary. And that's what I love about her, but she's scary. And it's like, I wouldn't want to flirt with Princess Anne because I'd be worried about getting locked away in a tower somewhere. So I chose Gustav and Karina. So Gustav is the nephew of Queen Margrethe of Denmark, and Karina is his now wife. And so, yeah, it's not exactly like cute PDA. I think I've only seen like two pictures of them this entire year. but they we talked in episode 26 about their marriage and why their marriage was so remarkable. And So they were together for 19 years before they were able to marry. And I mean, I'm not a believer that marriage is the end goal of a relationship and that like that's something that everybody has to do. But it's clear that because they've got married now, it's clear that they did want to get married throughout their relationship. That was something that they wanted to do. And they were unable to do it because if they'd married, Gustav would have lost his inheritance because of a will that was made by a dead Nazi ancestor of his. But it basically, his will said that Gustav had to marry somebody who was like Aryan, Protestant, and noble, and Karina is none of those things. So they had to wait for 19 years because if they'd married, otherwise he would have lost everything. But I picked them not because of like the cute PDA side of things, but because I think their love story is going to be one of those ones that we talk about for years to come, in the same way that we kind of talk about King Harald and Queen Sonja in Norway, or Lillian and Bertil in Sweden, which we will do an episode on, I'm sure, at some point.
Valentine's Day special.
I think, you know, that it will be added to the sort of canon of iconic royal love stories in due course.
I will be honest, I had literally never heard of them until they got married. But yeah, it's very rare in this kind of modern era of royalty, particularly side of Western royalty, for like a marriage to be disallowed. Like, people talk about, you know, Princess Margaret and not being allowed to marry sort of Peter Townsend, even though she was actually allowed to marry him, she chose not to, but different point. And like, everyone's like, I can't believe that happened in, you know, a modern Western country. And it's like, it was still happening in the same kind of way for Gustav and Karina, because it was the same situation. Like, if he married her, he would have lost all of this.
Yeah, it was lovely. And like, also, not many people, their marriage can be like a direct kick in the face to a dead Nazi. Not many people can say that. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good achievement, that like, they know that their marriage would have really irritated, shall we say, somebody who was racist and awful and terrible. Like, if I get married, it probably won't impact anyone really other than me and the person I get married to. Yes, best bromance was the next one.
Yes.
Yeah, so I really struggled with the best bromance. But I ended up going, and I'm not convinced by my choice, so I'm sure whatever you say, I'll probably end up agreeing with you. I went with Crown Prince Haakon and Prince Daniel.
I went with Little Prince Charles and old people.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure. Sure.
I mean, I found it really hard to pick, but I was like, who have I seen together a lot? And I was like, actually, it's Little Prince Charles hanging out with old people, or, you know, animals, or just being becoming instantly infatuating them with him and being in all their little best friends. And I mean, the amount we've seen him, I know I said before, it just always amazes me.
Yeah, I think you've thought very laterally about the best bromance. I didn't even, when I was going through my list, I was just like, okay, who are two men who spend time together? I didn't even think like, okay, we could pick Charles and all the old men of Luxembourg, or Charles and a bunny rabbit.
Yeah, Charles and a rabbit, my favourite romance.
Yeah, I like that lateral thinking. Yeah, because I mean, I'm not, as I say, I'm not sold on my choice. Basically, they just... So Crown Prince Haakon and Crown Princess Mette Marit went to Sweden, which we talked about in episode 22, and I think Mette Marit's got a long-term chronic illness, so she didn't go to a lot of the events, and it would have been very easy for Daniel to be like a third wheel, but I suppose maybe the bromance was the three of them, of like, they had big hugs for each other and big smiles, and they were staying at each other's houses rather than like in a hotel or something. They were just having breakfast together before they went on their engagements. And even when Mette Marit wasn't there, Daniel didn't feel like a third wheel. It felt like three good friends, but I wasn't sold on that. So I am perfectly willing to change my answer to Charles and the elderly men and women of Luxembourg.
I mean, I did think Haakon and Victoria when I was coming up with it, but I was like, I feel like they've been more bromancy in the past.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also just wanted to put Little Prince Charles for something, and I was like, well, he can be my bromance option.
So yeah, I think it has been a good year for Charles. He's been a real cutie, and my mum is a huge fan of him. So she'll be delighted anytime we mention him.
He is an absolute angel, and I love him. And I love the fact he's always hanging out with old people. And I think he should just do that for the rest of his life.
But does it, this is a difficult question, and I'm not saying that people shouldn't spend time with the elderly, because obviously they should, but does it get less cute?
Yeah, I think it probably does get less cute after a point.
Yeah.
Because I know when I was in like Brownies and Rainbows, we used to go and sing in nursing homes at Christmas, but I feel like they wouldn't want me to go in and sing to them now. I mean, they probably didn't particularly want me to go in and sing to them. If I just turned up and was like, I've come to sing Christmas songs, they'd be like, no.
Although I'm sure they would love Prince Charles, because he is just an absolute cutie pie, a little charmer. And I think after the last few years as well, like, there was a lot of focus from the Luxembourg and the Belgian royal families in particular around kind of elderly people in nursing homes and things, because they got cut off from everybody, really. Like, they couldn't see their own grandchildren. So for some of them, it might have been a nice break, you know, to be able to play around with a little kid. And he's, I mean, his work engagement count is higher than actual royals who received public funding. Like, he's always out.
Yeah, he was out like this weekend, and I was like, what? Yeah. I'm in bed still. How's he doing stuff?
I feel like Stephanie and Guillaume just weren't able to find a babysitter when he was born, or a nanny that they liked or something. So they're like, well, we'll just take him with us.
Like, we'll just have to come with us then. And initially everyone was like, no. And now they're like, is Charles coming?
Yeah. Next category, most heartwarming moment. Prince Charles of Luxembourg with at the 18th birthday for Ingrid Alexandra in Norway, the photograph that was released with him and all of the female heirs to the throne.
That was my most heartwarming moment.
Oh yeah, okay, good. Baby Charles. Baby Charles and the girls, I've got written down, which I didn't realise sounds like a pop group from like the Motown era.
Yeah, Baby Charles and his girls.
So we talked about that in episode 27. So Princess Ingrid Alexandra of Norway had her 18th birthday party, which was not like a standard 18th birthday party that I have experience of, where you just get drunk in a park somewhere. And we got a photograph of little Prince Charles, the tiny baby, and the female heirs who were children or just turned adults. So we had Estelle from Sweden, Ingrid Alexandra from Norway, Katerina Amalia or Amalia from the Netherlands, Elizabeth from Belgium. And it was the first photograph we've had of all of them together, and it was so sweet.
The entire event, her entire birthday, was brilliant and heartwarming, and it could have been the whole thing, and I love the speeches, but nothing could top those pictures. Because I remember when it was announced that Guillaume and Stephanie were going to bring Charles, and everyone was like, you can't bring a two-year-old to a dinner.
That was me.
And they took him not just to a dinner, but to these photos, and he wore this tiny little suit with shorts, and you know, like the big girls were wearing tiaras, and then Estelle wore this little sparkly headband, and they all wore dresses that kind of like complemented each other. And honestly, 10 out of 10, but Charles is just a precious angel that you just can't top. And I actually swapped this one and another category around quite a few times, but then I settled on this one being my most heartwarming because it did warm my heart.
Which is the definition of heartwarming. I was one of those people who was like, how are they taking Charles to a banquet? I was like, are they going to have a solid gold high chair? Like, this makes no sense. And then they said the Swedish royal family, like, we're going to take Estelle and Oscar. And I was like, what is happening? This is a banquet. Like, children don't want to be, well, Estelle probably doesn't want to be in McDonald's. She's very healthy. She probably wants to be, somewhere that sells apples or something. But, you know, I think I was really shocked to see that there's going to be so many children there. And then, so Charles didn't go to like the banquet bit, Estelle and Oscar did, which is still impressive, but it was really the photographs that came out. Like, we weren't expecting anything. We were expecting photographs of maybe everybody there, and kind of photographs of the Norwegian royals, but I don't think any of us were expecting this sort of heirs photo that would come out. That was kind of the first of its kind, which automatically makes it special. And but it was also kind of, there was one photograph of all of them sitting looking at the camera, and like Charles was in a normal sized chair, but he's tiny and in his tiny little suit, which just highlighted how tiny he was compared to everybody else. So that was very sweet. And then there was a second one that came out that was kind of like, Charles had obviously done something or made a noise or said, you know, something that little kids do. And all of the girls were kind of looking at him, and there was like a hand on his shoulder from Ingrid, and they were all smiling away. And it just, it was so heartwarming to me to kind of see this very optimistic, hopeful photograph showing the future, but also the kind of community between them. Of like, I just got this sense that Charles being sort of, I mean, he's not the only boy, but he's sort of the littlest boy and one of the fewer boys because there's a lot of girl heirs, that they kind of like, he's got this community of big sisters that are kind of going to support him as he grows up.
Yeah, I think, you know, beforehand people were like, oh, could you imagine if we get a picture of like the three, like Elizabeth, Amalia and Ingrid Alexandra and Chiara's. I was like, it's not going to happen, guys.
Yeah, don't count your chickens.
And then we got something even better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and everything that sort of came out about it was so sweet because you had, you know, lovely speeches and Amalia being like, oh, yeah, we've got a group WhatsApp where we talk about being a queen. Of course you do. It would have been brilliant anyway, but Charles just stole the show because he's so tiny, and he would have stolen my show if he went anywhere in that tiny suit. But
yeah,
the fact he was out there surrounded by his, you know, in 30 years when he's 32 and all the others, you know, the girls are getting on for 50.
Oh.
They're going to be hanging out again at, you know, Charles's wedding, and they're all going to be there with their own children. It's going to be so sweet.
Oh, I can't think about that because that means that I'm going to be like 60 and... But yeah, it definitely, like, these are links that are going to carry on hopefully, unless something horrific happens. These are links that are going to carry on for the rest of these people's lives. And so it's really nice to start seeing it early. And Charles, I just have this thing for baby-sized versions of adult stuff. So baby trainers and baby suits, just huge fan. So yeah, I think they could have just released a photograph of him in a suit, and that would have been the most heartwarming moment. So our next category, biggest plot twist. Now, there were actually a lot of potential plot twists this year.
There was. It's been a very dramatic year.
It's been a dramatic year. So we could have gone with the Queen announcing that she wanted Camilla to be known as Queen, which we talked about in episode 10. Could have talked about Crown Prince Hussein in Jordan getting engaged to a woman that nobody even knew existed, episode 35. We could have talked about Queen Margrethe cutting off half of her family in episode 40. Amalia being on lockdown due to a mafia kidnapping threat in episode 42. Or, of course, the fact that I not only watched the whole of, but really enjoyed the whole of the Royal Windsor Horse Show in episode 23, which was a plot twist because I am extremely lazy and I never really watch any of these sort of British official things that happen all the time. But I loved it because they set everything on fire and I discovered this intense love of horses and fire. So that was a big plot twist for me. But, of course...
There can only be one choice.
It had to be the fact that the Queen died and that we were maybe potentially the ones who caused her death.
Like, oops, we killed the Queen. I will never not be over that.
I know.
Think about it like 5 times a day. I'm like, remember when I killed the Queen? That's bizarre.
Yeah, episode 37, episode 38. Still can't believe that it really happened. I mean, the Queen was an old lady. So we knew... that, and she'd had a couple of health things and she'd been skipping things, so like we knew that it wasn't long until she was going to pass away, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't a shock because really we had no reason to believe she was on death's door until a few hours before it was announced. It was very much like it happened the day before. Everyone was like, okay, well, she's old but she's fine, and then it happened. So it was a very sudden thing to happen at that particular time. I thought we maybe had another 6 months or something to go. But it also was just that circumstance around it, the fact that we had coincidentally recorded an episode about what happens when the Queen dies. And then the fact that we potentially posted it at the exact same minute that the Queen actually died, because she died with sort of, we posted it within like a 10 minute window and the Queen died in that 10 minute window. So it means that of all of the minutes of the day, there was like a 1 in 10 chance that we potentially did it at the exact same moment. So I'm still convinced there's a cosmic link between our podcast and the Queen's life, and that episode 37 wasn't allowed to exist in the universe until the Queen died.
They were like, people need to know this at a relevant time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So yeah, it was just, I think the plot twist was not just the fact that the Queen had died and that we hadn't necessarily expected it, but also just that our own involvement in it.
I think this podcast has always been really intrinsically linked with the Queen's health, because yes. Our very first episode, we spoke about how the Queen is old, and just because she's old and ill doesn't mean she's going to die, because old people are old. And like every like five episodes, you'd be like, people think the Queen's going to die. She's not. Like all the time, we had so many episodes, we were like, okay, so the Queen's ill, she's not dying. Yeah. Or the Queen's a bit old, she's not dying. And then we did this episode, and you know, in the kind of lead up, you were like, oh, I've had a few questions about what's going to happen when the Queen dies, and you know, it's not like she's going to die soon. And within the episode, we were like, oh, it's all a bit different, is she's in Scotland, but she's not likely going to die in the next month, so we won't talk about that.
Yeah. And then she did.
And I mean, I was at work, and I just, the absolute shock, I was like, oh my god, we've killed the Queen. I need to talk to Jessica. I'm in the middle of a lesson. But it was, yeah. And then, you know, I had not really told many people in my normal life about the podcast. I told like my mum and dad, yeah, and like the old friend. But then people were like, oh, I have so many questions about this. And I was like, well, I actually know podcasts, all the answers to my questions in the next few. I know this. I know what's going to happen. It's all down in the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it was so strange that we just happened to do that at the same time, and we were so sure that it was not gonna happen, so it didn't matter. And it was just the moment where I was like, she's gonna die today, at the same day we've got this episode that's coming out, and it's just gonna be really bad taste that we're laughing and joking about what happens when the Queen dies, and people are gonna be listening to it when she has just died. And I was like, oh my god, this is gonna be the worst. We're gonna get cancelled. It was such a strange thing. And I also, like, I'm glad that I was able to, this sounds strange, but I was glad that I was able to see it, because it's a historic moment. Like, we've talked about a lot of things in the podcast and a lot of things that were very dramatic, but I think of all the things we've talked about, this is the one that like is going to be a moment in history that your kids and grandkids are going to ask you, oh, do you remember where you were when this happened? Nobody's going to ask me I remember where I was when Margareta removed a prince title from Prince Nikolai. Nobody's going to ask me that.
But yeah, it was, I rushed home from school. Like, it was, and also the fact it was so kind of, in terms of actual time, it wasn't that close to the Jubilee.
Hmm.
But in terms of school time, it was really close. And like, we still had Jubilee displays up. So there were like flags everywhere, and because, you know, because we'd stuck up, you know, pictures of the Queen for the Jubilee when we, you know, everyone painted their own stamp. And it's like coming into school the next day, and everyone was kind of making jokes, but also kind of being a bit confused about it. And like, we were like, okay, we're going to have an assembly, and we also kind of need to talk about the Queen, but we're not sure how. And, you know, that kind of just sort of bizarreness of the whole situation, that would have been there anyway. But at the same time, I was trying to talk to like these people I didn't really know, because I just started a new job, about this kind of monumentous event, and everyone was going, oh, Charles will be a good king, and oh, it's so sad, isn't it, she's died, and at least she's with Philip now. And I was like, but you don't understand, because I've done a podcast.
Yeah,
it's like, you don't understand, that it's so much weirder for me.
Yeah, you're just sitting there like inside being like, this is so weird, this is so, I can't tell anybody, I can't say anything, they don't know. It was such a surreal experience in general, because it was weird, because everything changed. Like, we had the end of an era, we had a new monarch, a new person signing our laws, loads of things had to change their names. So like, lawyers are no longer the Queen's Counsel, they're King's Counsel, and they're gonna have to change the stamps and the money and all those sorts of things. Like, everything changed, but at the same time, like, nothing changed.
And then there was that whole thing with the queue that thing, like, some people spent 2% of Liz Truss's entire reign in the queue. Like, that's great. I love that. Like, that's brilliant kind of gossip. It's the only, and it's all these things that you kind of knew when you were watching, it's never going to happen again, because no king or queen is ever going to, you know, unless something horrendous happens, is going to live for that long in the same era, you know. And even if someone like Margareta, who has been on the throne for 50 years, she doesn't have, you know, she's Danish, she doesn't have the reach that Queen Elizabeth had. And it's, she was such a, and I always said she was a really like unique person, that it was such a historical event. Kind of, it felt really bad to me. I was quite excited because I didn't want her to die.
Mm.
But I was really glad to stop having this kind of innate fear every time I got a BBC breaking news notification that it would be the Queen had died and I would have missed it. So I'm glad I got to experience it in real time. And yeah. I also have this real personal connection to it I wasn't expecting.
I mean, it's not that Britain's not talked about in the world because we are a global power and we, you know, mess up everyone else's lives. So they do talk about us quite a lot. But it was really weird. As somebody who's used to being part of like a niche little fandom, it was really strange to suddenly have this spotlight on us. And I was like, I don't like this at all. Because there were so many think pieces about like, what does this mean for British identity now that the Queen's died? And there was a lot of things about the Queen being a terrible person and everybody being happy that she died. And like, it was just, I don't really like being that much the centre of attention.
Part of the reason we started the podcast in the first place was because people kept saying things that weren't true. We were like, we need to just tell the truth to people. And there were so many people saying like completely, like even, you know, I remember my friends being like, oh, I've heard this happens when she dies. And I was like, no, listen to the podcast. And, and they were like, Grace, I'm not listening to a podcast about royals. And I was like, just listen to this one episode. You'll really enjoy it. And people, and you know, to be fair, when they listen to it, they're like, okay, that was quite good, Grace. I was like, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I do my research.
Oh, brilliant.
But yeah, it was bizarre, and I think that's going to be the biggest plot twist of my entire life. Nothing's ever going to top that one.
Yeah, for sure. And it did also, cynically, it did lead to a big bump in our listeners.
Yeah, big fan. Thanks, Queenie. I mean, I've just something dramatic.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, there was nothing else really that, you know, there was plot twists throughout the year. It's actually been a very twisty year with a lot of things happening that we didn't expect. But that was just, I never would have predicted that.
No, that was it. Nothing's ever going to top that one.
Our next category is pack leader, which we have interpreted as being like the best monarch. I mean, it's not going to be any surprise whatsoever that it is King Harold for me.
Yes, also for me.
Yeah, I think he has been a very good example of leadership over the last year. Very recently, obviously in episode 45, we talked about the situation where Princess Martha Louise, his daughter, will no longer be doing royal engagements. But the way that it was handled, which we talked about all in that episode, was just impeccable. Like, everybody came out of it looking really good. Didn't seem like there were any tensions in the family. It was decisive without being cruel. And there were lots of moments like that throughout the year where it was just reminding me of how much I love King Harold. I mean, we had a whole thing about him in episode 33 where we talked about why we love Harold so much, but I think there have been lots of examples of that throughout the year. And, you know, very recently, episode 45, that was one example of like very strong leadership.
You know, the Martha Louise thing was, you know, handled incredibly well, as we said in the episode, and he's always seems to sort of steer the family very well. Like, Norway just seemed to just float along quite happily, just helping people, doing good things. But then I always think Harold's speeches are my favorite speeches. And I know I've said before that, you know, the speech he made when William and Kate went to Norway and he was like, cousins, welcome. And I was like, that's the sweetest thing. But, you know, Ingrid Alexandra's 18th birthday speech he made, you know, it was lovely. It was a king speech and also a granddad speech. And there was that whole bit where he was like, just be yourself and it's, that was enough. And I was like, that would have made me cry. She's a stronger woman than I am. And then there's just some, you know, really sweet moments, like when, you know, at the Queen's funeral and they obviously the national anthem, you tend not to sing another country's national anthem. And he was just singing out loud to God Save the King.
Yeah.
And I loved that because in a weird way, he's his own king, but he's also in line to the British throne. So she was also his queen. So like, and they're closer related than most other royals are to, you know, Elizabeth, apart from, you know, like the Greeks via Philip and stuff. So actually related to her, he's one of the closest ones, and they were similar in age and had known each other for a very long time. So I thought that was very sweet. And I just like the fact that, like, last week he met Charles and we haven't got a single picture of it, and we just know because it was in the court circular that Charles met the King Queen of Norway. Like, I just like to imagine he just occasionally pops around the British royal family.
Just turns up at the gates, no one was expecting him.
He's like, Harold's here again. Oh god, buzz him in. who's Grand Madame Tussauds. I was like, oh, what's the nearest place we can go?
Yeah.
Charles's.
Oh, Charles's. Yeah, I think his speeches, there were some really great examples this year. So obviously the speech at Ingrid's 18th was just beautiful. It was warm and grandfatherly. It was kind of imparting wisdom, but was also really funny. It was just an excellent example of his speeches. Yeah, so I think he's just an excellent example of leadership in kind of, he's modern and he's progressive and he understands the challenges that a modern monarchy is going to face. But he responds to them in a way that feels natural and organic and kind of not like panicked or sloppy. Like, he just, I'm biased, but I just think he does an excellent job of leading the royal family. And I was actually talking to my mum about him yesterday, because I, you know, I'm such a big fan of Harold, and she referred to him as our podcast's pinup.
I love that. I agree.
Yeah.
You're going to make a Harold calendar.
Sort of on a boat 1 month. So yeah, I mean, it was unsurprising to everybody, I think, who knows anything about us or about this podcast, but Harold was definitely the ultimate example of leadership over the last year.
I think he's been the ultimate example of leadership for about 20. I mean, I don't know who was doing what 20 years ago, but I'm going to say 20 years. And I would be, you know, I always think, I was trying to figure out who would come second to Harold because I knew Harold was such an obvious choice. And I was like, no idea. Maybe like Felipe, one of the Philips. But I was like, I can't not pick Harold. He's like, on another level, if you're going to have a, he's like the good king in, if you were writing a children's story. Now, all these troublesome kings and queens, and then you have the good king, little Harold in the corner. He looks after all the people.
Little Harold in the corner. Nobody puts Harold in the corner. Oh goodness. So our next category is the top moment of the year, and oh, I'm not happy with mine, so you go first.
Well, you know, we said British people only have 3 minutes of being like soppy a day.
Yeah,
I have another three. I've nicked tomorrow's.
Okay.
I need to spill for this moment, because I chose the Jubilee. But I didn't choose it because of the Jubilee. I chose it because in the lead up, on the day of the first day of the Jubilee, when it was the Trooping the Colour, and we were on Tumblr, and everyone, it felt like, had sort of arrived on Tumblr and was kind of just posting and, you know, be like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. I wonder what this person's going to wear. I wonder what's going to happen on this day. And it just felt very like old school royal fandom, and I've had loads of people were there and everyone felt they were back and everyone's being nice. And, you know, I mean, overall the Jubilee was great because we saw all the kids and the family interacting, and Andrew got ill, so he wasn't there. And Anne went to a zoo for some reason. And it's where the whole Paddington thing came from. That's now intrinsically linked with the Queen forever, even though she probably never watched Paddington in her entire life.
Also, sorry to ruin everyone's burst everyone's bubble, but she didn't actually meet him.
And it was just like, it was just such a nice moment. And I was very concerned the Queen was going to die before this and we weren't going to make it to a Jubilee. But it did feel very sweet and everyone was there. And I ended up in London that weekend, not to do anything Jubilee. I went to the water play. But it kind of gave me the same vibes as when I went to like an athletics tournament once. Like, it was, everything was very excited and
yeah,
sort of buzzing in that kind of touristy way. And then there was a tweet while we were recording the podcast about Platy Jube. Roya Nicker, a royal reporter, tweeted, breaking, the royal standard has been raised over Buckingham Palace. Her Majesty is in the house for the finale of the Jubilee pageant. And that gave me actual chills when I read it. And I have in fact saved the tweet on my desktop so I don't forget to mention it in my end of year roundups. But aww, it actually gave me some full on chills when I read that. And it just felt very full curtain on like the Elizabethan era, even though I didn't necessarily enjoy all the events. Like, I wasn't sort of like great service of Thanksgiving, but like I enjoyed those 4 days of chaos and happiness and madness together.
I think that's a lovely choice. Yeah, I think it did feel very historic because obviously I didn't think at that point that the Queen was going to die this year, but I did think, well, she's not going to make it to the next Jubilee, is she? So, so it, we knew that it was kind of the last example of something like that. And there was throughout the entire thing, it was very much like, we have no idea when we're going to see the Queen, if we're going to see the Queen, what she's going to go to. Like, we've got no idea. There was no certainty, really. It was sort of like, we'll announce on the day what she's going to and what she's not. So, you know, I think there was a lot of symbolism in that moment of her going out on the balcony with everybody, or with the sort of main working royals. I typically don't watch a lot of these things because there's so many horses and people in the military, and there's no fire. Nobody sets anything on fire like the Royal Windsor Horse Show. More fire would be my recommendation for Charles to modernize the monarchy. Just set stuff on fire. But yeah, I think I can definitely see why it was such a kind of special moment.
Yeah, so. And it was, you know, it was these odd moments where, you know, I remember watching The Troop and the Colour. And I've never actually watched Troop and the Colour all the way through before. And it goes on for about 57 years, honestly.
It's so long.
So boring. And, you know, there were, you know, people who hadn't been on Tumblr in like 3 years, and they're being like, who can you see in the window? Is that Eugenie? And I was like, you know what? We're never going to have this again. And I'm just going to thoroughly enjoy it for the next 4 days. And I did.
So my choice actually has some similarities. And also this was the point where I was like, I did not realize I like the Norwegian royal family so much, because it is Ingrid Alexandra's 18th birthday. For me, it was my top moment of the year. And I think it was a similar experience for me, because obviously, you know, I do blog about the royals a lot, but I think you're more British focused than I am, and I'm a bit more Scandinavian focused than you are. And so it was kind of a similar vibe for me watching Ingrid Alexandra's birthday as to what you had for the Jubilee, because there were people who I hadn't necessarily spoken to in a while, who hadn't been on Tumblr that much, who came back for the birthday. And it was kind of after years of COVID, where everyone was inside all the time, it was one of the first big events that had lots of royals from all over the world at it. And there was kind of like a live stream, and loads of people were watching the live stream at the same time. And which is something we always used to do all the time. Like, anytime there was a baby or a birthday or a wedding or anything like that, we would all get together and watch the live stream at the same time, and we would live blog it and talk to each other about what was going on. And so there was that kind of excitement again of something that we hadn't had in a while, because everyone had been stuck inside with COVID. And so that was really fun for me, just to kind of see all my friends pop back and watching the same thing at the same time. And also, it was a very positive thing. You know, over the last few years, there's been a lot of negative conversations, and it's not fun anymore to talk about royals or to be on Tumblr. And that was an event where it was just fun.
I mean, yeah, I did swap between the 18th birthday and the Jubilee. I was trying to figure out which one best fit heartwarming and which one best fit top moment. And I think, like you said, I'm more British focused, so the Jubilee sort of edged it out. But I could definitely, like, I adored Ingrid Alexandra's birthday.
Yeah.
And I think also, after kind of the Swedes had stopped having their babies, it kind of felt like, well, what's next? Like, you know, all the eligible bachelors and bachelorettes had got married, and all the main key heirs and children had been born. And, you know, even if, I don't know, Beatrice had 14 children, there wasn't going to be a big thing about it because of who she was. And it kind of felt like we'd lived through this like 10 years of continuous things happening. And then it all kind of ended. And a lot of big things happened during the lockdown. So big birthdays or, you know, jubilees. And it was so nice to see Ingrid Alexandra's birthday being a big celebration of her, but then also of, you know, Amalia and Elizabeth, and being able to see everyone together in those sort of big and also sort of family photos with all these random people they probably never met before.
Yeah. It had everything that I wanted from an event. So it had pretty dresses, it had cute children, it had tiaras and new tiaras, which we hadn't expected, you know, it had all of that sort of fluffy stuff. But then it also had the kind of sense of community, and it reminded me a lot of like watching Madeline and Chris's wedding, or watching the christenings for the Swedish royal babies. It reminded me of all those sorts of fun things that we used to do back in the day before all the drama kicked off. It had the sort of more serious element of these excellent speeches from different members of Ingrid Alexander's family and from Ingrid herself, and Mette Marit's crying. So
I'm going to add to the softiness, but I do just really like the fact that we both went for celebratory events where one of the key elements was the kind of community coming back together.
Yeah, I think that's really sweet, because it had been a difficult year, a difficult few years. It's just can be sometimes a little bit overwhelming. So it was really nice to kind of be reminded of why I actually like to be in the fandom, which is kind of no one else I know in the real world cares at all, or even knows that Ingrid Alexander exists. But there's this community of people who do know, and who know who this person is, and have watched this person grow up the way that I have, and wanted to join in this happy, sweet, fun moment. And so our last category is the best all-around / superstar / valedictorian, the person who did the best job. And yet again, I'm not convinced about my category, and also I'm sort of repeating myself at this point, because I went with Ingrid Alexandra.
Well, I couldn't really pick.
Yeah.
I had like 3 or 4 people that I just kept swapping between. In the biggest plot twist to me that I think I've ever done, I kind of settled on William.
Oh, okay. I changed my mind. The biggest plot twist of the year was not the Queen dying. It was Grace picking William as her best all-around royal.
I know. I was shocked. I was writing my list, and I hadn't even made any notes about it because it was such a last-minute decision. My notes just go, well, Kate played a piano one time. Charles, Letizia, question marks everywhere. And then I've written William in the bottom corner with a tiny question mark. Go back to the start of this year, January 2022. William didn't really do anything for about 3 months, which is not very all-roundy of him, I'll be fair.
No, you're not adding to your point here.
Since he started working, I think he has done a good range of engagements. He's done a lot of community-based ones, and he's done a lot of those kind of higher diplomatic ones. So he's done things like visiting parliaments, visiting heads of states. It was really incredible during the mourning period for the Queen, like meeting the crowds, and like he met the crowds with, you know, Kate and Harry and Meghan. He met them just with Kate, he met them with Charles, and he, you know, went out of his way to speak to people. And I've never seen such a kind of outpouring of love for William as I saw during that period. This is the first year I've kind of watched William, and I never watched William. I watched William via Kate, so I don't tend to see things he does by himself. And I thought, you know what? Actually, I can see you as a king one day. I can see you being King William doing a good job. And, you know, I think he still makes mistakes, and I don't think he's perfect. I don't think he's come out of this year as like, oh, holy, holy William's never done anything wrong. I think he makes a lot of mistakes, but I also think he is one of the only royals who will try and address them quite quickly. I think if we go back to like the Jubilee visit to the Caribbean, and, you know, the speeches weren't always brilliant, but that kind of, the fact he did make a speech on that, or release that statement on the final day where he was like, actually, I don't know if I'm going to be head of the Commonwealth one day. It's nothing to do with me. That's for the people of the Commonwealth to decide. But I will always, you know, give it my best. And little things like that, I think he does have a really good understanding of what his role is going forward. And he doesn't always do it in the right way, but I think he does have his heart in the right place.
Yeah, that was very good for off the cuff, I have to say, with no notes. So I considered William for most improved at one point, but I couldn't pick them, either William or Kate, for this category, because if I did, the fact that their social media is so bad still, I would have just burst into flames. I wouldn't have been able to do it.
No, they do regularly annoy me, and I can't forgive the social media. And I gotta be honest, I don't think I particularly like William as a royal. Like, I don't follow William. I wouldn't say he's in my top 10 royals, you know, but I was trying to think of someone who I think has made or is trying to make good decisions for the people as much as possible, and I think he does. I think I don't give him any credit ever, and yeah, it's felt like a nice time for me to give him some credit.
Yeah, begrudgingly. Yeah, no, I think that's a very good justification for it. I think because it was a difficult category, really. Like, my favorite royal is Victoria, and I think she's done a great job this year. She hasn't had any major controversies that are her fault or anything. She's done lots of engagements. She hasn't worn like a £19 million dress. So, you know, I could easily have picked her. She's my favorite. But I think when I was looking at all of my notes and I was looking back at all of the episodes of the podcast, I was like, so many of my favorite moments revolve around the Norwegian royal family, which I had not anticipated really, because they're not, I wouldn't put them as my favorite. The Swedish are my favorite, but so it was Norway that really did it for me this year. My favorite moment was Ingrid's 18th. But it wasn't just because she was like a passive recipient of something good that happened. This was her, like, her debut year, really. She's done things before, but like this was the year she turned to an adult. And we got to see already a person who has really strong ideas, who has a really strong sense of themselves. And for somebody so young to have such strong convictions is just really lovely. So like the fact that for all of the photographs and things that she, and for a lot of the events that she went to, she wore her mum's clothing. And that's obviously like a nice touch of sort of bond between them, but it was also reflecting the fact that she's really, really strong on sustainability. And I kind of was like, you know, there are adult royals who talk about the environment all the time and then just wear a stream of increasingly expensive clothing. And then like her confidence as a speaker, the content of them was very Norwegian in that it perfectly blended their humor and their personal touches, which is such a hallmark of all of those things. It felt like this was the year where she burst onto the scene as somebody who has ideas and has thoughts about what she wants to do with her life and what she wants to do as being queen, as a modern young woman. But she also is very much Harald's granddaughter.
I don't want to have high expectations because she's 18 and anything could happen. But I do have very high expectations for Ingrid Alexandra going forward. And I think if she carries on doing what she's doing, she's going to be absolutely phenomenal, grown up and representative of Norway. And one day queen.
And it does feel strange to pick like an 18-year-old who didn't really do that many engagements this year because she's 18. But it was her year for me. It was the year of Ingrid. And she brought us so many of these things that weren't just this passive thing. Like this, somebody put on a really nice birthday celebration for her and she just happened to be there. Like she was integral to my enjoyment of these events because she gave us these like family moments. She gave us a really strong sense of her personality. She did interviews, she did speeches, and she was funny and moving, and she was the one with her hand on little Prince Charles's shoulder, like checking on him. And just given that it was my favorite moment of the year and they seem to be my favorite family of the year, I just felt like she was the best choice. But I will be interested to hear what other people think, what like our listeners, who their best all around was for the year.
Yeah, I think that was the hardest category.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone's had the best overall year. I think everyone's had missteps. And like, even, you know, I debated Kate because I love her and she's still the love of my life. But I was like, and in so many ways, this is, you know, she's her highest engagement count this year by quite a while. And, you know, she's done so many wonderful things. But like, she's not hit to that like shining moment where I was like, yes. She's done it this year, or you know, and I everyone else I debated, like, you know, Letizia and Felipe, I'm like, how much of them have actually done things this year, and how much of it is just I've paid more attention because I've done this podcast and I've noticed things that I've never seen before. But then I realized that what I was doing every week when I was complaining that Kit wasn't doing any work was being like, William, stop working so I can see Kate, she's making Kate look bad. Like, hang on, maybe the problem isn't William.
Yeah.
Maybe William's doing the right thing here.
Yeah, maybe Kate should be doing more. If he stays on the right track and gets some new people to handle his PR and his social media, then I think he's got some potential in him. And over the last year, we've definitely seen him as a leader more than we ever have before, I think. And it'll be really interesting over the next year to see how that progresses and see when we do our second anniversary, hopefully. Though, you know, is his social media still so horrific that I can't possibly pick him for this category? Or has he redeemed himself? Is he in the most improved category?
Yeah, you never know.
You never know.
I do think I like that both of our choices were quite like, you know, like they have the opportunity. Like, Ingrid's just starting out, she's brand new on the scene, and she's done so well. And William's 40 and is finally doing something good. And they could both be really, really good in the future. So that is all we have for this week. Thank you for joining us for today's episode, and also over the last year. It has been wonderful. Hopefully we will still be here this time next year to do another yearbook of royals. And hopefully we'll see a wider range, because it was the same, like, five royals.
Yeah. I didn't know I liked Norway so much.
That's a them issue, not an us issue. But until that point, we will see you next week with some things that might actually happen. And until that point, it is a goodbye from me.
And a goodbye from me.